Now entering Nerdist.com. Jackie Cation, Laurie Kilmartin. Jackie Cation, Laurie Kilmartin. It's the Jackie and Laurie Show. The Jackie and Laurie Show. It's the Jackie and Laurie Show. The Jackie and Laurie Show.
Good. Oh yeah? My God, you scared the hell out of me. You came to my house an hour and a half early.
It was an hour and 15 minutes early.
I go up, you go down. I round up and you round down.
Exactly. I was 45 minutes early.
Oh my God.
And I sat by your pool and it was lovely. And it was nice. And
I
just got back from... I didn't do stand-up.
Hold, slow down. We're doing two.
Oh, that's right. We're doing two.
People want to know what I was doing while you were lounging around. I was folding laundry and sniffing underpants to see if my son had worn them or not, because he doesn't even put them in the right pile. And most of them...
It's a huge reveal.
He'd worn.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what?
What?
Sometimes I'm psyched I'm not a parent. I don't want to stick my face into other people's underpants. You know, here's what I have to say. If you're worried about it, wash them again.
Dude, you know what? My mom has been in the hospital for a glorious 10 days.
Oh my gosh, she's still in the hospital.
Yes, but I'm doing the laundry now.
Yeah.
I want her back.
Right?
It's horrendous. It's nonstop.
She was doing the laundry?
You fold something and then some shithead wears it and immediately throws it on the ground and it's a new thing you have to clean and fold again. Mm-hmm. I hate laundry.
Oh,
it's awful. And I hate doing other people's laundry.
Right.
I don't like doing my own.
There's a long stare there where I'm like, I can't fix that. I don't know.
There's no app to make it better. There's no way to fix it. It has to be washed and folded and put back in the right place.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Otherwise,
people
go nude. Otherwise, there's nudity. And
I'm sorry. So,
yeah. Stand-up comedy. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
I haven't done it in 2 weeks. Until last night, did two sets.
How did that go?
I was awesome. It was awesome. I actually have decided that me trying to micromanage my sets, like I've been doing, I wanted to grow up and be you for a long time. Last 6-8 months, I was like, why am I not poring over set lists? Why am I not working on 3 words in a 10-minute set? It turns out I'm a different comic than you are. It can't possibly matter, is what I've decided. And
interesting. So you had some revelations while you were driving around.
Yes. Driving around the red states was had nothing, very little to do with comedy, except for as every day went by, Andy would go, "You're a little twitchier today than you were yesterday." Because if I don't do stand-up, I get edgy.
Right.
And I do what my entire family does, which is I talk to waitstaff.
Yeah.
I talk to people who are trapped behind bars mm-hmm. and at hotels. And I start doing stand-up one fucking person at a time. And nobody needs to hear it. Nobody. I was at Custer's.
You can do that here in L.A., actually. Just do shows with one person
right,
at a time.
Right, right. And those are booked. Those are hard to get sets.
And according to the reporter, Hollywood Reporter, they pay up to $1,200 a week.
Oh, fuck. Let's wait on that.
We'll get there.
Because I just want to tell you that I went to Little Bighorn.
Yeah.
And... And so I was so excited to go to Little Bighorn so that I could actually say to someone who worked at Little Bighorn, why is there not a frozen custard stand here?
Oh, my God.
Because there ought to be a frozen custard stand at a Custard's Last Stand.
How long have you been sitting on that line?
I have been
almost
sitting
your whole life, right?
Yeah, except for I only thought of it as we were driving down a highway to Custard's Last Stand.
I think there's a subconscious Jackie that's constantly working on shit that's for vacation only.
It's true. This morning I woke up actually with a new angle for my dirtbag population joke. And it's a positive angle, which I love to death.
Yeah.
Okay, we could talk about 1,000.
But wait, so you did two
sets
last night.
I did Dynasty Typewriter.
Yeah.
Where Maria worked on her new hour.
Wow.
In front of haircuts. All the haircuts came.
What do you mean? Like
like industry types.
Oh.
Like the fancy. They were super supportive because
right.
She is beloved.
Yeah.
She's beloved. And they're just like, and then her manager filmed it.
Yeah.
And 2 days ago, I was driving through Arches National Park, and I got a text from her. She's like, hey, are you going to open for me at Dynasty Typewriter? And I was like, yeah. And then there was a long pause, and she goes, and I didn't say anything about it, but I was like, is she going to pay me for an in-town set a bunch of money? And it turns out she is. And yesterday I get to the gig and she goes, hey, so I turned this into a benefit for ACLU. I'm not going to take any money, but I didn't talk to you, so I thought I'd still pay you the $1,200. And I was like,
whoa.
For an in-town gig that I drive 40 minutes for? How
what?
About not?
But that actually vets that article. Except you're not a newer comic.
Right. Except for I'm old. Except for I'm a super old comic. No. Well, but the thing is so I said, because I did just go on vacation for 2 weeks, I said, and I do donate a lot. I've been throwing money at stuff.
I know. Didn't
for
you
months.
Give like over $1,000 to Black Lives Matter?
Yeah, over in Sacramento from the Meat Shield.
Yeah,
t-shirts.
That's amazing.
And but the and I'm $82 towards the next thousand.
Wow.
I've already made back the prudent reserve so that I can order more shirts and then I'm going to send it to ACLU Iowa.
Oh, cool.
So, because there's some reproductive rights thing that they're going through in Iowa that the ACLU is going to do. Anyway, so, but the... I said, I'll take $600. And so then she donated $2,000 to ACLU.
Wow. Wow.
Local or national, I don't know, but it was, and get this, I fucking destroyed.
Awesome.
I don't say it all the
interesting.
Time
interesting.
You know when I say it, I say it when it happens. I don't say it when it doesn't happen.
Right So yeah, you're not one of those I crushed.
They carried me off stage, you guys.
Yeah, dude, I was there.
I was,
and
yeah.
Nothing was crushed. Everything is buoyant and bouncing back. Things were not crushed.
You did not crush. I'm so sorry. Yeah, but I actually had a really great set. I was pretty psyched about it. There were a couple of jokes that didn't end right, but that was me. That wasn't them. And they were so on board.
There's also that thing where if you take some time off, even if you take some time off from a bit, although you're still doing stand up for a while,
right?
You just come at it fresh in a way, and
just
you
so
sort
excited.
Of are figuring it out as it's coming out of your mouth, and you say it differently, and it doesn't feel like oppressive, you know, and you find new things in it.
Right. I got to do 25, and then I went and I did a board game store in front of a dozen people and someone with a very cute puppy in the front row, over in Sherman Oaks.
I think I've done that one.
Did?
Yes.
You did Paper Heroes.
Yeah. You did, okay, cool.
The woman who booked it, she said, well, the people were like, how did you get Lori Kilmartin? And I said, I asked her. And it was an attainable goal. Is what it is.
I am so attainable. It's shocking.
Right. It's attainable. Now, let us speak about the many, many dramas that are going on. First of all,
God.
Hollywood Reporter article was vaguely infuriating. Did you read the previous Hollywood Reporter article with Amy Poehler?
No. I read her responses
to those same five dumb questions.
Yeah, they asked a bunch of dumb showbiz questions. She just kept pointing out things that are going wrong with this country. It's great.
It was really great.
Yeah.
So the article you're talking about.
Well, for, you know, there, first of all, this is the season where it's 10 comics to watch and who's hot. And it is crushing when you're not included.
Right.
And it never stops hurting.
And
it really
doesn't stop hurting.
No, it hurts
and
me now.
And our careers are fine.
Yeah. And I don't want to feel jealous or like, what about, I want to be, because I know, since this has been happening, since I've been aware of it, since like the mid 90s, I've seen friends like lifted, you know, like they were beamed up to a new place because they were on the to watch list. And then they, you know, some of them crested, some of them did okay. Some of them just went right back to earth, you know, but so it doesn't mean anything. And we're all, in the end, we're all comics, we're all struggling, and some of us are barely hanging on for decades at a time. Like, there's no reason to turn on each other, or there's no reason to be jealous of, you know...
Who are we supposed to be mad at? That's the real question. Who can we be furious with? I don't know who to be mad at.
I mean,
the haircuts.
Republicans.
Republicans, okay. For sure. But
but what? So to even even though it's, you know, it's positive, but it's also divisive, because whenever you're not on a list, and that would be 99% of us every single year.
Yep.
It's very painful, and I'm looked over. I'm forgotten. They looked at me and went, "Nah." That's even worse. What's worse, that
and probably more likely? That's what I always think.
They forgot about you.
Is it? Does it hurt more that they're not thinking about us at all, or that they saw us and didn't give a shit?
Right. I don't know. And I guess it's
both burn. They
yes,
burn.
They both hurt. And so it's hard. So when you see, you know, the list in print, you know, every comic has these anxieties, and I'm sure it's common among all of us. But you know, it's
artificially created.
Yeah.
And the good news about me is that I am almost completely unaware of those lists until some banana head points it out. That would be you in this case. You pointed out that fucking list.
Well, you know, you go on Twitter. I mean, and there's people I know and I'm like, this is really cool. This is exciting for you. And it never happened to me. Like, that's always the second half of my sentence.
Right.
Wow. I was never that.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But I'm still here.
Right. So there's the list that came out, and there's the Hollywood Reporter thing. Nick Thune fucking sold his special twice. That was the first paragraph.
I'm so jealous.
I was so confused.
But I am because he had a CISO special that he sold again, and I haven't been able to
sell 45
resell
jokes.
45 yeah. jokes, which I would love to.
Right. Because and I was never able to sell Horcrux.
Right.
Never. So, right. By the way, I'd like my 18 grand back. just once. And feel free to go to comedyfilmnerds.com and download it and spend $10. Or buy the DVD, which is what I ended up doing, just printing DVDs. You can go to jackiecation.com, buy the DVD. There's a very nice bonus track on the DVD of me choking. The first night I recorded it, I had a brain freeze, and I was like, no, put that on as the extra track. Me just literally saying, I got to go get my set list. I'll be right back.
I don't mind this because, A, this is a free podcast and people should support you and me. And, B, we have 2 hours to kill today.
Oh, so you don't mind me plugging?
No.
Dead people suck. Every other fucking word. Okay, what just
It's
happened?
So early in the podcast to resort to plugs. That's usually...
Oh, right. It's usually a last
time filler at
help.
The last second. Yeah.
So I did that and then I did Paper Heroes and I got to do 10, 12 minutes up there.
Back to this article, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know who these agents are that they're talking to that are tracking comics doing spots. Yeah. Here's the thing about LA. You can do a spot at a comedy club. You can do a spot at a bar that usually a comic is booking, or you can do a spot at a completely inappropriate place to do comedy, like a front lawn or a tiki,
I'm doing something called the Golden Hour, and I assume
I've done the Golden Hour. What
that it's
it?
Going to be outdoors and there's going to be some sort of like sunset moment.
I can't remember what it is. But anyway, but that's what LA comedy is.
Yeah.
So I gotta turn your phone off. It keeps turning it over.
Okay. Yeah.
It doesn't pay anything, essentially, when you're doing spots. They don't.
Oh,
you know,
right. And it said.
They just don't. They don't pay anything. And who knows if these clubs are making. I mean, I assume the bar venues are barely making money.
Yeah. You
know, who knows? Every once in a while, there's somebody that produces a show that they have an audience that returns and they make good money. And good for them. It's hard work.
It's a lot of work.
And they sometimes like I just did a Cool Beans. And Corey pays for Cool Beans. He filled a room at the Pico Playhouse, and it was a great crowd.
There was a lot of drama in 99-2000.
Yeah.
When Josh DiDonato was first running Largo.
Yeah.
For 2 years, he ran that, made dime none. There was no money being made.
Oh, yeah.
And then it became this huge fucking thing, and he started bringing in bank, like $1,000 or this is all arbitrarily.
Yeah.
These numbers are arbitrary. Everyone just got furious with him. And so Largo took away the show from him.
Oh.
And gave it to Lisa Linegang.
Oh.
And then she started paying comics. But I don't remember how much she paid, but I think it was only like $20. But it was like, I was like, I don't know. if it's ever proportional. New York seems to be more proportional.
Yeah. I mean,
for sets and
right.
stuff.
And yeah, there, in New York, you can, if
you can kind of make a living.
You got to have a good deal on an apartment. But
you can make a shitty living in New York City with stand up comedy.
You're an established.
But you're still not making $2,000 a week, are
No, 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 no. I mean, well, here's the thing. Like, if you do.
Like, three people are doing that.
Hold on. Say you do, like, if you do 8 spots on a Friday and a Saturday. So
watch
that's
the math.
So 8 times, let's say average is 80. Sometimes it's 100. Sometimes it's worse. So that's, you know, say it's like 700 Friday, 7 Saturday, and then maybe. But you also have to pay cab fare and that. So maybe you're bringing home 1,000 cash, you know,
for a weekend,
right? And now if SD decides she doesn't want to book you the next weekend. You're fucked.
You are fucked.
Yeah, you can't. So it's when you're
so
in
maybe
that,
$4,000 a month. On the good, because the best case scenario.
Right, the Sunday through.
Well, Kyle. Kyle's like, there's $4,000 a month.
Kyle just moved to New York during this podcast. Goodbye, Kyle. He's on a plane right now.
He's literally red with jealousy right now. He's turned bright red.
I'm talking
red.
Like.
She's talking about three people.
I'm talking about the cellar acts, okay? Because the cellar acts, I think three rooms that are all within walking distance. So if you have like a, you know, an established, like a Dan Natterman, Russ Mini, whatever, those guys, they just bump around from club to club and they have a rake.
And just think of it, Kyle, they don't get to work on their long set. Boo hoo. So sad. Actually, that would kill me.
But that's New York, and then it costs so much to live in New York. But LA is a totally different thing, and most of the shows that I do here in LA are produced by other comedians.
Yep.
You know?
And there's no money. There's no money for
sometimes
them.
Sometimes there's gas money. Sometimes you get like 20, you get between $8 and $20.
Right. Right.
For gas money.
And
the
Laugh
Factory pays, but then they pay you with a check that you have to remember to pick up another
Jesus
time.
Christ.
So half the checks I get from them are like 8 months old and I can't even deposit them.
Right,
because like,
they expire.
But
this is yet another reason why I'm okay not working the Laugh Factory. It's
fine.
Do they have valet
but
parking?
Everybody has their own, whatever. It's in LA, you do not do stand-up for money. You do stand-up to get better.
Right.
And you
do
it that way
because
in
you
New
have
York
to do stand-up
as well.
That's not, I don't know how.
And you're here to make other things happen so that you can make more money on the road as a stand-up.
Okay.
Right? You're here to get acting work
that's,
or writing work or whatever
are
it is.
Some theories of why people do stand-up in Los Angeles.
But you do auditions. You could live anywhere, but you live in Los Angeles.
It's true because I think I remember when I was told to move here.
Yeah.
And I was told to move here is that they were like, you either have to move to LA or New York. And I moved here because I had a friend who I could split a studio with. That's literally why, like, I could have moved to New York and it would have been more road friendly.
Yeah.
Because you, in my opinion, without all the information as per usual,
right.
You could work the road better from New York than you can from here.
My guess is that the best, if you just want to be a road comic and work locally where you live, Las Vegas, because you have flights you have cheap flights going in and out from every, you know, major and minor city.
Yeah.
If someone can't make it, you're there. You can pick up gigs, you know, at the various casinos when they know you live
like
there.
This sounds like a nightmare to me, but I don't think you're wrong.
I would hate to live there, but I think if you decide...
Well, I could have stayed in Minnesota if I wanted to just work the road.
Right, right.
But I wanted TV spots.
Yes.
Which can happen in either New York or LA.
Right,
and wanted... I didn't know what else I wanted. Like, I knew I wanted to act, but I also knew that I wanted to keep doing stand-up.
Yeah.
So that's the limbo that I've lived in.
Yeah.
In the last 20 years, I haven't done anything about acting enough to, you know, I took several I haven't really done anything about the acting part of it. But I don't want to write on a show. I do want to write, but I don't want to write on a show. And I know people who do.
Yeah.
So, but that's another reason to move here.
Yes, for sure.
Or New York.
Yeah, so laughably, somebody, I mean, the way, it wasn't quoting anyone, the writer said,
it was
the,
just a statement.
Abramowitz, yeah, said, newer comics working the LA circuit. Well, who the fuck says LA circuit? There's no circuit. What's a circuit? What are you, from the Catskills? The circuit, that's not even a term anyone uses.
Well, it's right by the Chitlin circuit. It's an old vaudeville term but for nothing.
I guarantee you nobody in comedy told this person said the phrase LA circuit, okay? Because there isn't one. It's just spots at venues. That's all it fucking
is. What's that cool bowling alley that pays $100?
What?
wait, all of a sudden both of you look up. Wait, what? No, there's one. It's like in Chino or...
Oh, really? Is that also a casino?
No.
Oh.
No, I thought it was just a bowling alley.
It's just a straight bowling alley?
A straight bowling alley with a four-wall bar in it.
Oh.
Pays $100. Allow me to look in, because someone offered it to me. But it was an hour and 15 minutes from here, and I said no, because I didn't want to. You, Lori Kilmartin, will drive for 3 hours.
It depends what night it is.
Yes, a night that you can do it. You're like, of course I will. so it's any night.
But that was so erroneous and laughably off. And then the reporter or the fiction writer, the novelist who wrote that article,
up for the Pulitzer.
He said newer comics.
Newer
this is
comics.
Like entry level.
Right.
Make
so
between $1,200 and $2,500 on the LA circuit.
So what you're telling?
What,
Lori? Are you not making $3,000 to $4,000 a week like I am on the LA circuit as an established comedian? People are just handing me bags of money every time I walk into any bookstore or beanery.
So LA, I lose money. Even if I didn't have to get a sitter, I would lose money on gas for 90% of the spots I do.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, someone throws you $20. And sometimes if it's a comic, I feel so guilty because I have a guild job. I'm like, you keep it. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's no cash. There's no income in
happening.
LA comedy.
Yeah, it's not
now,
happening.
Now, maybe when someone's headlining the Improv on Friday and Saturday, maybe they have a door deal, a Greg Fitzsimmons or whatever, you know, Joe Rogan, those guys, they get a door deal that weekend and they probably take the entire cover.
Right.
That's something. But that's Rogan. Those are major names. And
again,
they're just,
you're talking about 5 to 10 comics max. Like the New York comics that are making close to $4,000
a month. Right, right, right.
There are 5 or 10 comics in New York that are doing that.
Yes.
There are 5 to 10 comics here in Los Angeles who might be making, like if you do the Ice House for the weekend,
right,
you might make $2,000.
You, not I'm, me. Or, don't say you and look at my eyes when you say that.
Well, but if you're like, I don't know, if Fluffy came to town. And
right.
Gabriel
Iglesias makes whatever he wants. I mean, so don't confuse regular comics with people that are famous.
With Sebastian Manicotti. That guy.
Is his name Manicotti?
Yes, of course it is. Made you laugh. It's Manisculo or whatever. It's I can't remember.
That's what's irritating. His name is so hard to remember, but he's famous. Like,
right?
My name's easier to remember. Why can't I be famous?
He did perform as a one-name comic for most of his career.
Did he perform as just as Sebastian?
Forever.
My friend Sebastian.
Man. Oh. Yeah, once you got Sebastian M, you're good to go. Like you can find out where he's playing. And
right,
stuff.
Right. You could Google the word Sebastian
comedy,
M.
You can comedy Seb, and then you already have his gold star lineup.
I bet you if you did Sebastian Manicotti comedy, he would come up. So I say it's fun.
But so that was total horseshit. But within the horseshit, there was also just
was
this.
Like
but there's also this false sense of comedy. You know, Netflix is making everyone headliners, and everyone's making $30,000 a week.
Right.
And so I don't have a Netflix special.
Nope.
Everyone else seems to. A lot of people seem to.
Press and company accepted.
Yes, but you can't even say, oh, they don't have women. They have some women.
They don't have
a lot of women, and they don't have you or me.
Right.
And we've been doing comedy 30 years.
Right.
I got a fucking hour after 30 years, but I don't know what to... I
don't even know who to talk to.
I don't know who to talk to, and... I'm tired of being angry.
Right, you're tired of being angry. And what are we gonna do? And every time somebody tweets at Netflix, why doesn't Jackie or Lori have a thing? I'm always like, I don't think that's how that works. And be like,
I think, but they get tweeted at all the time.
My Aunt Alice, by the way, 91, mm-hmm. called me yesterday. She called me while I was in the car, left a message. Hilarious, laughing at me, by the way, said, my postman knows who you are. He said, that Jackie Cation, she's really funny. And then she goes, he said that you were almost as, and she's laughing while she says this. He said, she's almost as funny as Ellen DeGeneres.
Dude.
And I was like, why are you laughing, Aunt Alice? Ellen DeGeneres hasn't done an hour in 15 years. I'm not saying
she's
that Dory
isn't
funny.
She's actually going back on the road.
Of course she is. Everyone should go back on the road.
It's weird. You know, there's this worry that the boom, you know, will end. But mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think stand-up is taking over as a major art form. And
I think it'll always be fine.
Yeah.
Right?
But I mean, it's like, we're just looking at stand-up in the United States. And people are just discovering it in other countries. And they're just like, there's newer scenes in other countries. And then there's old scenes that we haven't paid attention to.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm doing a set in Hanoi and I'm doing a set in Bangkok.
Wow.
At the end of October. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yes. Because you could write off your vacation.
Trip to Cambodia. And don't think I won't be working the Hampton Inn there as well. It's Andy actually said, you know, when you don't eat, actually said this as I'm bussing the breakfast area of the Hampton Inn. He said, when you don't do sets, you genuinely punch in. You punch in and become part of the service industry so that you can do something. And I was like, I need to be on task.
Kyle, how much have we done? Do you want to do Comic of the Week? Because that just kind of leads in. So our Comic of the Week, because I've never seen her. I just heard an interview with her in the New Yorker radio hour on KCRW.
And then I watched some, you texted me about her. And so I watched some of her stand-up. She's hilarious.
Hannah Gadsby.
She's
Australian.
Australian comic woman.
And again, I haven't seen the special yet. I want to. I actually do want to because it sounds weird and different.
Yeah.
And not.
It's a Netflix special.
Yes.
Hannah Gadsby.
Right. And she kind of like deconstructs stand-up comedy while she's doing it. And then I just heard a few, you know, bits on this radio show. It was really interesting and funny.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know if it's what, again, I haven't
seen
it.
It's so interesting that you can do anything.
Yes, but there, it's like stand-up is being moved forward, being pushed forward by people that, you know, women and minorities that probably saw it as they were growing up going, all right, I don't want to do that, but I want to do something like that. And so they're changing it. It's like music. Music, you know, is changed by whoever starts doing it.
And music hasn't changed in, you know, I think hip hop was the last new musical. I mean, I'm sure there's.
What about punk rocker?
Okay. The punk scene was before that.
I know. I was being dumb right. on purpose. It's my character, Jackie.
I'm sorry you didn't put on a hat.
I should have crossed my eyes, Jerry Lewis-wise. But so Hannah is...
Is it at Hannah Gadsby, Kyle?
Yeah, so she talks about... She's gay. She's from Tasmania, which is apparently like the Alabama of Australia.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She's coming...
It's the joke place.
She's got a lot
sure,
of things
of
against her, you know, that people make fun of. Or that, say, straight men would make fun of. Is being gay, being, big... You know, heavier.
Okay.
And, being from Tasmania, and
Does she do jokes about? Because she isn't that big. I think
she talks about people's.
She's super cute.
Again, I don't know. I'm not. I haven't seen it yet. But how she was talking about comedy and how she just said it's a lot of you with a joke you create tension and then you release it
mm-hmm.
and that's what you do for as long as you're on stage when you're telling jokes. And she says we're really stressing people out, which is very true.
That's hilarious.
She kind of wanted to go further than that. Now to me, I'm like, that's good enough for me. I love when I come up with a good joke. I'm so happy. And I don't necessarily need it to turn into a huge story.
Yeah.
You know? And
that's not how you write.
But the other thing I'm like, but is my life forcing me into being this sort of short joke writer? You know, I only get these, short spots in Los Angeles right now or New York, you know, and also I write short jokes all day at Conan and, and my life
that's
is
the muscle that you do work.
Right. It is. Yeah. My life is very, it's, I don't have like this expansive life where things are always unfolding in front of me. You know, like the walls are just closing in on me. I'm the opposite. Where,
oh my God. You're definitely stressing me out. You have a punchline to this story.
So part of me is like, if stand-up's moving into this different storyteller place, like is, you know, do I have to go there? And what if I'm not comfortable going there? And
the greatest thing about stand-up comedy is that it can be fucking whatever you want it to be.
Right. But if what if I'm considered doing old style stuff? If I'm not doing these like Mike Birbiglia sort of unfolding huge
thematic.
Why would thematic...
you mention fucking Mike? No, anyway.
Because he does the same thing. But
he's
my
arch enemy.
Oh, yes.
So you're right. A lot of people don't know that, including Mike Birbiglia. Anyway, so.
But like I was watching. Her. At a club recently, and she was saying about her and, you know, some other people, like, wow, we need to have a message. You know, like a lot of the stand-up that we're seeing being built by a couple female headliners who probably, when they say, hey, I have an hour, immediately it's being shot, right?
Right.
You know, and they have like, there's like a feminism theme and a theme about this and a theme about that. And then they're breaking down all this stuff.
But John Mulaney doesn't have a theme.
No,
he doesn't have a message.
But I'm talking about women right now.
Okay.
Okay. So.
And, but why does it have to be? Why?
I don't know. I'm just saying it was something I noticed. And I know that the other, these two.
Yeah.
We'll probably have specials coming out soon. That
over
are
and
themed.
Over and over again.
Yes. Right. And I think like. The circle too. And then, which is fine. That's kind of how they're approaching things.
But yeah.
It's different from what I do. So is that why I'm over here on the sidelines?
Right. This is a classic Lori Kilmartin overthink. this is a way that he, because the thing is, first of all, you can't write like either of these
two.
No,
I can't. No.
It feels first
too,
of all.
To me, it feels too preachy. But
right.
I can see that the audience likes it a lot. But for me to come at a joke like right on the, or a topic right on the nose and then give all my opinions all around it, it feels really preachy for me.
Right, right. Well, and it can be. That's exactly what it can be and is to some extent with some of these incredibly more of my writing is this head first kind of barreling into topics, you know,
but
they aren't preachy. And I will stand
around,
by that.
You do throw in personal stuff that makes it seem like you're coming to the topic second and the personal story first.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't feel like, and
I appreciate that because that's actually like previously to the sort of more what I consider more straight political stuff I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
I've always done socio-political stuff, but it's always come entirely from a story about my family or the circumstances.
Right,
right,
right.
And now I'm like, I'm going to be talking about, I think of it as me talking about being white. But the example is entirely personal, and the joke itself is from a very personal place. So it's also sociopolitical, though I have flipped it a little bit. That's interesting. And I, what you're doing is, I think your stuff is personal, but it's short, right? Mm-hmm. My stuff is personal, but it's long, and there's no way. You could write like, I mean, the thing about stand-up comedy and the thing about Netflix is that they're not going to give a shit about us until we figure out who to ask. And like, I was just, I just emailed Janet Varney to find out. I was like, who do I email to find out if Lori and I can come to Sketchfest and do a live Jackie and Lori and do some sets?
Hmm.
And she hasn't responded yet because she's Stan No Evil, the Dana Gould. Stand Against Evil.
Oh.
Thank you. I knew you'd know.
When you said Stan, I immediately went to one of the Turkmenistan, Afghanistan. I'm like, oh, she's overseas?
Yeah, she's overseas doing stand-up. No.
In one of the stands.
Oh, and right. And all of these people wanting to do stand-up now that are either storytellers or they're famous or they can tell that there's something that people want, right?
Right. I mean, when I was at Laugh Boston. I was there Thursday through Saturday. Tuesday and Wednesday was Jeremy Piven.
Wow, Jeremy Piven.
Yeah, and he's also on a
the
show.
Poor
I was
man's
at
John Cusack.
At the no, Cusack at least doesn't do stand up.
No, I love John Cusack. Quite honestly,
And he was also at the Laugh Factory a couple months, maybe like a month ago when I was there.
Right, there's people who do something like stand up. Like I remember Danny Bonaducci in the 90s.
Oh my God!
Remember?
Right.
And you were just like, what are you doing? And he's like, well, I'm mostly just telling stories about being the Partridge Family guy.
Right.
And I'm telling them in funny ways. And that's exactly what he's doing. There were no punchlines. They were literally just stories. And some of them were funny stories.
Sure.
And that was fine. But it was not traditional
it's not,
stand-up.
And it's also not sustainable because
and it was not sustainable
you're going to run out of stories.
Right.
But so it's because the Partridge Family, do you learn to do that with other parts of your life? Do you care enough?
You have to.
I don't know.
Which is what I remember a couple of episodes ago, I said that I saw Adam Sandler at the at the lab.
Yes.
He was, because he, I don't know if he comes from a stand-up background.
He does, yeah.
Right. Because
he
was
got
stand-up.
Famous very young and very
that's
quickly.
What it is, because he went away too fast.
Yeah, I remember
like
he was super young. Again, I want to be obsessed. I do remember watching him on Letterman. And he was really young. And
did he get
and
to
he
do Letterman?
The word tits. I remember
oh,
that.
Letterman.
Going, wow. Hmm. Okay. All
right. Right. So, but he came from a stand-up background. So when he was talking about his kids and his family, first of all, it wasn't hacky. So I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And second of all, it felt like stand-up.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Because he came from a stand-up background. Mm-hmm. And you can turn any story. Danny Bonaducci could have turned something. Jeremy Piven, whatever
he could have.
The fuck
he was actually a funny guy, but I think he's also on steroids and he's kind of crazy. And
that hasn't stopped anyone else, has it? You don't invite him to the house. Anyway.
And, have we talked since Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain committed suicide?
No.
Wow.
People don't want us to talk about that this time.
Really?
You know that they want. You know what they want us to talk
oh,
about.
Oh, yeah. Dude, again, we got 2 hours.
So sad, guys. We're going to talk about it next hour.
No, we got to talk about it.
We should do it now because we're at like 40,
hour.
Right?
Yeah, you got a little optimistic there.
I think it's going to be at least a 20-minute conversation. You
really?
Don't think so?
Okay. Sure, let's
and
go.
And then we can talk about Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain next hour.
Okay, great.
Because suicide, you guys. The hilarious world of suicide.
Middle-aged suicide. We're still here. How is that possible?
Our birthdays are next month.
Oh, my God.
I know it. We're going to be 40 again. What?
No, don't make that apron joke my mom used to wear.
Wow. It's a whole new low, you guys. I've been compared to her mother.
No, brutal. My mother's apron.
Yes.
I think she had that joke on an apron that she...
Oh, did she?
Cooked meatloaf in. Just...
Anyway, because... okay, so... I don't know Chloe.
Oh, right. Yes.
I think I've met her, but I don't know
I don't know her either.
And
what's her last name?
It starts with a D. And it doesn't matter.
Is it Dykstra?
Dykstra,
okay.
Sure,
okay.
Whatever. She seems fine. But she wrote this article in Medium talking about her ex-boyfriend and what a terrible boyfriend he was. And it's more than that, except for the fact that for probably 17 years, I was a wingman and never had a boyfriend. And I know so many women, and I have been through so many shitty boyfriends with my friends that none of that surprised me.
Oh, yeah, it all rang true, especially...
Well, it rang true, but it also rang several dudes. I know dudes who've had those kind of rules for girls, for women, their whole lives.
Yes.
Like, I had... My friend, Sarah, went out with this guy on Cape Cod, and he was one and super... I mean, he was so charismatic and so interesting.
Yeah.
And... But he had all these creep factor rules about how she couldn't talk to other people. And she had to, when they were out in public, she had to just concentrate on him. I don't know what their bedroom bullshit was.
Right.
But I just remember going, he doesn't seem nice. But I don't have a boyfriend. So maybe this is what boyfriends
That's
are
what
like.
That's what boyfriends are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, it was just the different things that she wrote the Medium article, right?
Right.
And then it supposedly...
was Chris Hardwick.
Everyone figured out immediately that it was Chris Hardwick.
I mean, I woke up and I saw him trending and I was like, oh.
Did he die? Did he me too?
Did
what
he
happened?
Commit suicide?
Right.
Yes.
Did he commit suicide?
It was. So, yeah, I mean, he, you know, started Nerdist.
Right.
And we are on Nerdist.
Yeah, we are. But they took his name off the founding
immediately.
Thing.
Immediately. That to me was like, oh, okay. This is serious.
And they didn't have any problem doing it.
Yeah.
They were just like, hey, we were waiting. We were hoping we could do this. And done.
Yeah. I mean, it's a corporation.
I don't know.
And
I mostly know Chris Hardwick from open mics and booked gigs from 1999 to 2002.
I don't know him from stand-up comedy. And in fact, I don't see him out doing spots ever. I just met him one time at Midnight. And then he did like a little talk show at Aspen in 2005 when I was there. And I watched it. And that was it. That's the only two interactions
I hung out
with him.
When it was a hookah bar that used to do stand-up a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And we did mostly that.
Is it down from the Improv?
No, it was in Westwood next to an ice cream sandwich store.
Okay.
It was a hookah. Dee Dee Reese? Yeah, the ice cream place. It was a buck for an ice cream, two cookies.
Yeah, another high-paying LA gig.
High-paying, I know it, exactly.
The circuit.
It was a hookah bar, and it was, that's the one I mostly knew him from.
Yeah.
The most, and it was, and then I have one time when I met him when he was, and he was drinking a lot then, mm-hmm. and like he had a rule, the craziest rule.
According to
that Medium article, mm-hmm. was that because he stopped drinking, she could not drink. That was it. He was like,
but you have that rule with me.
I have that rule with everyone around me. Whenever I meet somebody, I literally slap the beers out of their hands.
I would be hammered if it wasn't for Jackie during this podcast.
If I've ever met someone who is not an alcoholic, it is Lori Kilmartin. You have different addictions. I don't know what they are. But I only say that because everyone's got to have one, right? You hate to be alone.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but he, I when he was doing Shipmates... Remember Shipmates?
Oh, yeah.
It was some sort of dating thing on a ship.
Right.
And and it was seasons after season of that. And he lived here and he did it. And he literally, he stopped doing stand-up and was just doing Shipmates and was sleeping on a Scrooge McDuck pile of weird Shipmates money. And, you know, and Andy, my husband, went to college with him and saw him do stand-up when he was 20 or 21 years old.
Right.
And he distinctly remembers him. And he goes, this is what Andy said the other day after all this came out. He said, you know, I've always wondered about Hardwick. You know, I saw him when he was like 21 years old and he was clearly the most talented person I had ever seen live do stand up when he was 21 years old. But he got sucked into this LA system of, well, you don't want to do stand up. You know, that old Hedberg joke, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Something like. It was like you meet someone who's a chef and then you say, you're such an amazing chef. Have you ever thought about farming?
Right.
And it's that. And it's much better than that. See Mitch Hedberg's Public Works. But Andy genuinely was like, why would someone stop doing stand-up comedy? And I said, that's why I love you. Why would no one should stop doing stand-up comedy?
You got the only good civilian male.
Possibly. But but it was, I don't know. All I know is that I always believe the victim, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
he sounds like, the first time I read it,
right?
I will say this. I was like, oh, he just sounds like a shitty boyfriend.
Yeah.
You've had a shitty boyfriend. I don't know that that counts as abuse. And then I reread it and I was like, well, it clearly went too far and you didn't get out. And so it escalated and then you took drastic measures to get out. And what? And then it took you 17 drafts to write this.
Yeah.
So you just want closure.
Probably.
And well, that was one of the things that she said she wanted. And then I accidentally read his apology. And that's where it fell apart for me. Literally.
Yeah.
I was like, well, this sounds like a terrible thing. And so then I stopped reading his apology and started rereading Dan Harmon's apology. Have you ever read Dan Harmon's apology?
Oh, I think I did. About Megan Gans?
Yeah. It is
how he harassed her when she was working for him.
On Community.
And he
apologized to her?
Totally acknowledged it?
He acknowledged it. He specifically acknowledged that she told him any number of times that she didn't like him like that, and he was in a position of power, and it was actually coloring how hurt she did her work. And
wow.
she could, and he was like, well, I'm giving you these advantages, too. And she said, yeah, but then I can't tell whether I'm actually good at the work or if you just want to sleep with me. And he's like, well, I just this and that. And then he broke up with his girlfriend, and then he told her he loved her. And she said, again, this is so not appropriate. It isn't good. And he said, oh, you want to be treated like a male comic? And then he proceeded to treat her, and he says this, worse than he had treated any male writer in his staff ever. And he just kept just needling her, and then literally drove her away and drove her mad. And so he apologized to her in his apology, Dan Harmon.
Yeah.
And also, I read it. It was long. It's great. You should totally Google
it. I did read it. I've already forgotten.
Yeah, everyone should read it. But he apologizes to the men that stood up to him and said, hey, man, you got to leave her alone. He said, every time a guy said that to him, he said to that guy, oh, you're just jealous. I'm a huge feminist. I'm super supportive of women. And he blew those guys off and he apologized to those men. And I, like, literally, it was, and then. So he published that apology, and Megan Gans actually accepted his apology publicly on Twitter, and said it was like a masterclass in apologies or whatever. And but I was like, so instead of continuing to read Chris Hardwick's, hey, I got her a lot of work. She cheated on me too, and you know all this stuff. And instead of that, I just went and read Dan Harmon's apology again. So it seemed the same way to respond.
I read Brock Turner's father's, apology.
Did you?
All he said was, this is what he said about the rape that his son committed. It was 20 minutes of action. You're going to ruin my son's life for that? That's what he wrote at the judge.
Oh, that's so, right. Okay. That fucking piece of shit.
That's the one I remember.
Yeah. Oh, that'll
do it. To me, I was like, wow, he sounds like a terrible man to be in a relationship with. And usually those people aren't great to work for. It's not like people are like shitty to women in their personal life and then awesome to
everybody else, like
in their regular life.
Right, right. It's usually that power dynamic just bleeds over.
It is interesting how, like, when I read that, I mean, I think she does. Did she say something about sexual assault? Like,
she said that it was the first time that she said she didn't want to have sex with him.
Yeah.
He said he literally said to her, this is why I broke up with my last girlfriend.
Right. So if that's the only thing we're talking about, that still sounds like he successfully overrode her objections with
coerced her. Well, and then she said, so I didn't, it was the implicit threat is that I will break up with you unless you lie there think of England.
Extreme psychological terror.
Right. And then, she's spent another 2 years just lying there, taking it, thinking, never say no, never say no. And she says at the end of it that there were, he was good to her too, but there wasn't enough good. And there was so much manipulation that she had to get out and the thing is, the other things that are coming out now, of course, is that she was kind of a dirtbag. And it's like, it doesn't matter. People stop being horrible. Being horrible to each other.
Well, I mean, that's sure. Of course.
Ideally.
The fact that Nerdist immediately... Here's the thing. If you're a comic and your persona is what all of your success is based on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, that's why Louis's shit was so devastating, is that he just seemed like the first, comic who got women and was super feminist and talked about stuff where, when comics had talked about it, they sounded like they were complaining. At least Louis says it. It's like he's talking to other men. I mean, that's why that was so... I think that's why an extra level of shock,
interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
So...
Because his stand-up was fascinating for that reason. Because it was so personal. Yeah.
But so, Chris Hardwick has a reputation. He has a persona. Let's say that. He's a persona. No one's exactly like their persona.
No.
Right? But if your persona is that you're a good guy... And
supportive of nerd culture and supportive of...
Not a good guy. That harms you professionally.
Yes. It harmed Louis professionally.
Yes, and it is,
currently harming Chris Hardwick.
Right, because Nerdist immediately reacted.
AMC.
And AMC as well. So, because I was kind of I don't want to dive too deeply into when I start reading these things, because it's the men criticizing her and the people going, yeah, but what about him and this? It's like, hey, it's his. Everyone's making money off a persona,
right?
And if people don't buy the persona anymore, then they're not going to make money.
Right. You claim to love capitalism. That is the definition of it.
It really is. And, yeah. And so, like, he was supposed to be at Comic-Con hosting the Doctor Who. And you'll have to walk me through this. I'm wading in waters I don't understand. But it was...
What you should know is that I have not been able to make it through Doctor Who.
Oh, well, Jodie Whittaker, who was in this other... BBC thing I fucking love that was on AMC. It was like she was the mother of a murdered child. Oh, I'm so into that. Anyway, so she's on, and so he lost that gig. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, the thing is the people going to this Doctor Who panel, the actors participating in it, don't want to have to answer questions about somebody's sex life or how they are in relationships. It's a distraction.
Right.
When you're
from selling the
show. That's why with politicians, a lot of them, they have to, it's a distraction. It may not be illegal, you know, Al Franken, it might not have been illegal, but it's when you're a liberal and you're a leftist, it's a huge fucking distraction.
Right.
And you got to go.
Right.
So when you're a comedian or your public persona is that you're a happy-go-lucky nice guy,
mm-hmm.
and you aren't in real life. Like, if this was, you know, Axl Rose, I'd be shocked if he didn't have this relationship. You know what I mean? There's certain people where you're like, right. I'm pretty sure that guy's a dirtbag. Oh, it's been confirmed. And, you know, yeah. I don't think that would change how he made money.
Right.
But it does change how you make money when it really...
Who is Axl Rose?
From Guns N' Roses.
Okay, there you go. And so, I'm so sorry. I knew that he was a musician. I just couldn't remember.
You know, music has changed so much, as we were saying earlier. And that wasn't the best example.
He's a punk rocker.
But I'm
this is me pretending to be smart.
Someone's like kind of a dirtbag professionally, it's not a shocker. It's you know, it's always nice to find out that they're not really, and it's an act in a way.
Right.
But you know, it's while people are like, oh, now his career's, you know, his career's been tanked. You know, I don't know about that. Who knows?
Yeah.
Everyone wants to have somebody and make a comeback. And, you know, part of being a comedian is not being too different from your persona.
Right. And on the same grounds is that's why this stuff gets canceled. And that's why you don't get work. I read I forgot to send it to you. It was an article about how Louis planning a tour. CK.
No, really?
Somebody, and the thing is it's early days. There's no dates. There's nothing. It's just a whisper of a rumor.
So does that mean he's just doing spots? Is planning a tour?
No, I thought he was going to tour, like an hour. But the weird thing is, or he's just doing, I mean, I don't know if he's doing spot. I heard he did a spot at the Cellar the other day. Is that mm-hmm. true?
I have no idea. Oh, yeah.
You heard that? Yeah. So, but there's money to be made still from Louis C.K.
Yes.
Is what mm-hmm. the industry is saying. Because what infuriates me, and also...
there, and now it's redemption comedy.
It's
there's
yeah.
money there. There's a lot of guys who want to... I'm sure there's a lot of guys that are like, oh, I did that too.
Right.
And now they want Louis to tell them how to apologize.
Yeah.
I mean, is his actual apology was shitty. So.
Louis C.K.'s entire act is about processing terrible life decisions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
So if he can turn that into a cash cow that this is, and if anyone can, he can, because that's how he writes.
Yeah.
That's not how Bill Cosby writes. Bill Cosby doesn't write
about
processing terrible things.
Right.
So he cannot, there's
true,
no money
true,
there.
True, 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 true.
The thing that irritates me is that anybody who says, like, there was that tweet about how the woman got
the Louis woman or the
no a woman on the that we were talking to, it's and I have to write it
oh,
down
yes. Okay,
so she
how the club owner had a crush on her, right? Or it was, no, the it was comic
a,
the other
yeah,
comic
the headliner
on the
had a crush on
yes,
her
yes, yes.
Hits on her. She complains about it to the club owner and the booker.
Yeah.
The booker never books her again.
Right. And he books the headliner
again.
Right.
With Louis C.K., it's essentially that. Women who complain about anything.
Yes, right.
As minimal
they pay a price.
As the headliner
headliner won't keep his hands off of me.
Right. They never get booked again.
Right.
And so, but Louis gets booked again. And so there's the injustice that makes me want to go, I don't like it. But if it's the capitalist model that makes Chris Hardwick get fired, there's the capitalist model that makes that woman not get booked again, or me.
Right.
Because it's happened to me as well, where it wasn't, I just, because of the person that I am, I piped up and defended somebody.
Yeah.
And have not been booked at the club again.
Which club?
That one. Remember those two, that club?
Yeah,
so
right.
I defended the people that were involved, the woman that was involved. And because of it, the club owner and the bookers have brought me back.
And that is income that you are not making for at least 1 week a year. Mm-hmm. And that's how you make your living.
Yeah.
People forget. This is like, you know, you don't get 30% off your mortgage because you're a woman, because women make 30% less than men.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I love that analogy. I would like 30% off my bills.
But I mean, that shit starts to add up because this guy, actually, that club is two clubs.
Yep.
Because they have another one.
Yep.
And another place in the Northwest. Right.
Yep. So that's the only thing. But if that's the capitalism, if the capitalism gets, as Dan Harmon said, it got me fired and then he had to come back from it. If capitalism causes that, and capitalism causes me not getting booked too, so am I going to support both of those things because of capitalism, or am I going to say, you know, I
don't think those are equal things.
Well, there's certainly not justice
against women who point out that they're being harassed at work. Isn't the same as a guy
who harasses
coming back?
Someone.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there ought to be a different bar for it, is what I say. But if we're only doing the capitalist bar, if we're only doing the economic repercussions of business, then that makes the people who are doing those economic repercussions of business assholes.
Yeah.
So Hardwick lost his job. He's not going to live check to check, it turns out. Patty Hearst supported him. Did you see that?
Well, his wife is Patty Hearst's daughter.
Right. So who doesn't want Stockholm Syndrome getting on your side? Who doesn't want that not being phoned in?
I was obsessed with Patty Hearst.
Why wouldn't you be?
I grew up in the Bay Area. I still remember that iconic photo of her holding, was it an AK-47? Or I don't know, some rifle.
Right.
And her name was Tanya. I was like, what the fuck's happening?
She changed her name to Tanya?
Yes. When she was in the SLA, the Symbionese Liberation Army. she went by the name of Tanya.
Okay.
And she
it's
participated
in it. Such a junior high fucking thing to do. I'm changing my name to Tanya, you guys, with a heart over the Y.
You leave Patty Hearst alone.
I'm going to leave
Patty
Hearst.
From the Bay Area, and she's
suffered.
Mine.
She suffered.
And such a fascinating case.
Were you ever fascinated by Lizzie Borden?
No.
She gave somebody 40 whacks. There was a poem. How about Ed Gein?
Oh my God, that was the worst. No, but somebody I know is fascinated with Ed. I know some people that are fascinated with serial killers.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's mostly male comics though.
Yeah. And and Michelle McNamara.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And Karen Kilgariff.
Oh, right.
And, Georgia.
Right. O'Keefe.
Hartzog. Yes. Heart what?
Hartzog.
Hartstark.
Hard start? How do you spell that?
I have no idea.
H-A-R-D-S. All right. Yeah, you swallowed it a couple times. I'm like, he doesn't know either.
You're just, right, there was no confidence. It wasn't O'Keefe. Right, I just went with famous painter.
I want to listen to the podcast, but I get scared so easily when it's a true story. I can't handle it.
The Kilgariff podcast?
Yeah. I started one I still haven't read the McNamara book because...
I skimmed it because it was too scary.
What if they got the wrong guy and the real Golden State Killer is still out there?
Right.
And he can come get me.
He's not gonna.
You don't.
The Dork Forests with Michelle were so awesome.
Yeah.
And I remember at one point asking her, "You guys have a really good security system, right? And she goes, oh, yeah. Did I ever tell you the story that she was on set with Patton once and she was talking to one of the directors or whatever of whatever he was working on? And the guy said, they were talking about crimes or something. She said, yeah, we have a really good, we have like Mossad level protection system. And the director guy goes, oh, are you working with Ari?
Ari.
Right. Michelle was making a joke, and there is a Mossad guy named Ari who owns a place that can defend your house.
Interesting. Well, I'm not going to hire him.
We're good. Shocked that you don't need Mossad level protection.
It's Mossad, not Mossad.
Is it? I want it to be.
It's been driving me crazy since you first said it.
Is it Mossad?
Mossad. Right. And Mossad.
Mossad.
But it's not Mossad. And it's not.
I had an uncle Moose. I just saw a moose.
The way you are segueing out of topics in the last 15 minutes is very distressing.
Is it distressing? Should we do another one? Should we record another hour?
How
do you spell it?
H-A-R-D-S-T-A-R-K. That's what I just spelled.
Start.
Hello.
I heard hard start, but...
Well, we've been talking about Hardwick. There's a lot happening. Are we almost done with this one? Oh my God. Okay.
Bye. Talk to you soon.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.